please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
What?
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 What? Which episode is
What is this? How are you doing this?
Shape of Water.
Oh.
Spoiler ep.
Number 73.
Yes.
So we've done 404 regular episodes, 73 spoilers.
Mm-hmm. And then some of them we haven't counted, like as bonus eps and stuff. Yeah. They don't even have numbers. So, yeah. I mean, when you add all that together, that's like over 1,000 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's absolutely correct. That's great math. I'm in favor of your math.
Yeah, I'm rounding.
We're rounding up in multiples of 500, typically, which is always fantastic.
Yeah. That's how the government does it.
Why can't we do it?
Yeah. So now I'm excited to talk about this movie because it's the kind of movie that really deserves a spoiler because it's so indescribable, and some of it is where you have to have a spoiler to talk about it because we're going to be talking about the ending, you know, mm-hmm. key plot points, and there's so much that happens in this movie there's just a lot to talk about.
Yeah, so real quick, we got to do this every episode because a lot of people just find us for the very first time. So we're going to talk about The Shape of Water, the everything in the movie, the ending, key plot points. So if you have not seen the movie and you don't want to have that ruined for you or spoiled, hence the title, I would hit the pause button.
Yes. See the movie, then come back.
Then come back. Mm-hmm. But you're right. So this movie is one of those, because you can only talk around it. So you're either going to give stuff away if you're trying not to give away spoilers, or you just have to talk in the most vague. Yeah,
There's a fish man.
Yeah, there's
and
a fish
deaf,
man.
And a deaf cleaning lady.
And a deaf cleaning
lady. Or a mute cleaning lady.
And a mute cleaning lady. And yeah, she has feelings for him. You can't,
yes,
that's it.
Yeah. And a guy who goes to the pie store but doesn't eat pie.
Right. So it's just like there's nothing else you can say. So I want to talk about the ending first.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She grows gills,
yes,
jumps in the water with him, and lives under sea for the rest of her life.
Pretty much. Becomes a mermaid. And it's interesting in a way that I wasn't expecting, like...
It's like a female Splash.
Yes, pretty much.
Spoiler alert, yeah. Tom Hanks joins Daryl Hannah living under the sea as a man-made.
Yeah.
And, or a merman.
And sings with a crab with a calypso accent. So...
Under the sea, that's where I'll be. Under the sea, shape of water, we are making love in the bathroom.
So, you know, maybe when they go to the Caribbean, they really are going to the Caribbean, just in the ocean.
Right.
So, but what I liked about it was there was no detail left to chance. Like, everything had a purpose. Everything from the color to the way a scene was shot to the way an actor was presented, everything had a purpose. Like, the scars on her neck became gills,
right,
which was, you know, part of her journey and the metaphors of... of transitioning and
not
growing.
Being, yeah, and not having a voice. That's that great scene where she goes to Richard Jenkins and says, listen to me. You know, he's sort of dismissive of her, of like,
yes.
She's like, we gotta let this guy loose. And he's like, oh, come on. And she's like, listen, repeat everything. She's doing this sign language, repeat everything I'm saying. And she's like, spells it out. He doesn't have a voice. He can't talk.
Right.
You know, I can't talk.
Right.
I'm not important
and,
in this world, you
and
know?
One of the lines that she said is like, you know, the asset, as they call it,
right,
in the mm-hmm. in the movie, like the fish man doesn't know that there's anything missing from me. Like the fact that she can't speak.
That's
like
such a great line.
Doesn't know that there's something like that she's incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was one of the reasons, too, as part of the love story, you see the cause and effect of, like, you know, as ridiculous as it is, she falls in love with a fish man. You know, somehow Guillermo del Toro makes it believable, but it's moments like that where he pulls it off.
Yeah, because that's what he does. So mm-hmm. there's this humanity to it that's just like, oh, of course she's in love with the fish guy and she's got to set him free. Like, you just, because, for, and it's so many wonderful things. She's an amazing actress.
Yes.
And the, all the little details there, he sets the tone. So the opening credits with the Richard Jenkins voiceover saying, we're going to find out there's a princess. Sally Hawkins' name comes up and find out who the real evil person is. Michael Shannon's name comes up. So he's right. already just telling you from the beginning, he mm-hmm. plants that seed. The opening scene, she's in the bathtub masturbating.
Yes.
That's she masturbates in the yeah. bathtub, but it's not yeah. it's not creepy. It's not like hey, yeah. It's like, oh.
But
hey.
Guillermo del Toro is telling you at the beginning of the film, this is hard art. This is
yeah. He's like it
this is not a kid's fable.
This is not a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. It is but it's an adult fable and it's done mm-hmm. even the you know, the her in the bathtub scene in the beginning, I was like, oh, that's kind of sexy. And also, you just told me so much of who this woman is.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like, she's lonely. Just because she's a mute and wears plain clothes doesn't mean she doesn't have needs. She doesn't need. She doesn't mm-hmm. have a sex drive. You know, she mm-hmm. doesn't want love and all of that. So it was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And then we see this the setting of her life. It's all set up. The movie
right.
theater she lives above.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love the... It's early 60s, like Kennedy is in the White House.
Cold War,
definitely mm-hmm. Cold War. That's integral to the story.
Yeah.
But just, it's this sort of old school showbiz fantasy land. He sets that tone immediately. So when there's a musical, a black and white musical where she's in a dress dancing with the fish man on a stage with a full orchestra,
yeah.
it's like, oh yeah, of course this is her fantasy.
Why wouldn't this be in the movie?
Of course.
Yeah.
And it's all, and they do it, they light it, so it's like, this is her fantasy.
Right.
Where she's like, she can sing and talk in the fantasy, and he mm-hmm. can hear her in the fantasy.
Right, and that's what it would feel like.
Yes, mm-hmm. if he got to hear me, it would be like dancing in some Fred Astaire.
Right, Ginger Rogers movie.
Beautiful gowns, mm-hmm. the love of my life.
Right, so it's, you know, even as a fantasy sequence, no detail was left to chance or just felt random. It really felt like, well, this is what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it would feel like. I mean, that's the main thing Guillermo del Toro does with this movie is convey the emotion of these different characters. Even Michael Shannon, you feel, as creepy as he is, you feel what he's feeling. Yeah. Like, from the movie, like, even just, you know, his home life. And the most important thing to him is his job and his work and, you know, basically, quote, protecting the asset.
Well, that's a great point. The scene he has with, and I forget the actor's name that plays the doctor that then becomes the
double agent.
Yeah, it's a Michael Stuhlberg. Yeah, Michael Stuhlberg, who's a fantastic actor. You know, and
he's
that's
great.
Huh?
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, Boardwalk mm-hmm. Empire and Fargo.
Yeah,
and. Always plays a wide range. He played an alien in one of the Men in Black. Like, he's got a really like unique. He's played a lot of really cool, interesting sort of supporting characters throughout his career.
Mm.
And there's that great scene where Michael Shannon, of course, is being an asshole. Come back in, protocol, knock, open
right.
the door.
Right, yeah.
But then Michael Shannon explains, and you have a moment, when you have a moment of empathy with the awful, the worst person in the movie,
right.
that's effective filmmaking.
Yes.
Michael Shannon's like, look, I got to take care of my family. We got to move up the ladder, so I'm going to do whatever I got to do, because that five-star general is introduced, who's
yes.
an asshole. Who's I love that character actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's on...
Guy from Justified.
He's legitimately an asshole. If you follow him on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nick Searcy? Yeah, yeah.
How so?
He's a right wing bird.
All good for him then. Go fuck off. but yeah, that scene, he's like, count my stars, you know?
Right.
He's just a five-star mm-hmm. general asshole. And it
was all leading towards, you know, the kind of like that military mindset of like, well, if we can't use it as a weapon, we're going to need to destroy
kill it. Kill
it. Yeah, yeah, kill it. Just kill it.
And mm-hmm. the thing, too, I love Guillermo del Toro wove in all these little things. Yeah, we got him in the jungle, and he was, you know, this fish guy was preventing oil exploration, so we had to get him out of there. And it's like, wow, that's what the American military is really all about. That's their main job. You know, like, there's I was watching the show Empire Files, which is on Telesur, which is also on, you can watch it on YouTube, about Chevron has just been digging for oil in the...
Have they found any fishmen?
No, well, not that they're telling us, but... Yeah. But they've contaminated the river. Indigenous people are having, who live there, are having all this cancer and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And I just love how he just, in the middle of this movie, he just weaves in.
There's little breadcrumbs for an environmental message.
Yes,
yeah.
Such a great environmental message.
And also, I believe they say they found him in the Amazon where the original Creature from the Black Lagoon was set. So,
which is great. Which is like, and I think that's Guillermo del Toro's. It wasn't a mistake.
No.
It was his tip of the hat of like, oh, I grew up with these creatures. This is my interpretation of a modern day creature feature love story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I want to take all of these things and put them together, you know, and just giving a voiceless person a voice.
Yeah.
You know, letting a marginalized person find love. Mm-hmm. The evils of, you know, military and corporate power.
Yeah, he said, like, the with the love story, he said in an interview, it was like, well, it's the shape of love is the shape of water, you know, the way, because meaning that it's fluid and you can't, you know, fit it into any one container.
Right. Like, and it takes the shape of whatever container it's in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a famous Bruce Lee thing when he was on Dick Cavett.
Like, be like water.
Yeah, you put water in the cup, it becomes the cup. Put water in the bowl, it becomes the bowl.
Yeah.
Become like water, my friend.
So I really like, the other thing I liked about Guillermo del Toro's movies is they're lean. Like there's not, you know, he trims the fat out of his movies. Like when you look at everything from Pan's Labyrinth to, you know, Shape of Water, you're like, there's never this 3 hour long, you know, just, I'm like, oh God, it could have taken 40 minutes out of that.
2 hours and 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That's with a long credit sequence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's an hour and 50 minus the business at the end. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
And it didn't feel like anything was like extraneous. Like it felt like, oh no, I needed every single one of those scenes in the movie.
I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he did Hellboy. You know, he did Mimic, like early in his career. You know, it's just like, and even those films were sort of studio films and.
You know what's interesting? I didn't like his first movie, Kronos, I believe it was. I just had Ron Perlman in it, and it was this weird kind of vampire story, but not really. It was just, it wasn't a great movie. So it's interesting to see, like, when a filmmaker is allowed to develop what they can actually turn into. Like if you told me, like, years ago, well, this guy who did Cronus is going to make Shape of Water. I'm like, oh, there's no way. He doesn't have it in him. And it's such a progression for what he's done. Especially Pan's Labyrinth is a brilliant film, too.
Yeah, and then he did Pacific Rim, which
we
really liked. It was a fun action, you know, and he's doing... and so
I can't wait for Uprising.
Pacific Rim,
it looks great. I know he's not directing it, but... it looks really fun.
He's directing an untitled Michael Mann documentary.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So it's just like he's doing Pinocchio. That's been announced.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I think this I'm hoping that this movie, because it's getting the award accolades and it's getting a lot of attention. Again, it's a $20 million movie.
Right.
This is not a $100 million big epic.
I mean, easily, like when you look at a movie like Hostels, $40 million. You could say, okay, I could see that costing $40 million. I don't know how they pulled off Shape of Water for like 19 or whatever they said it was. Like they really, every dollar is on the screen up there.
Yeah. And I mean, even, I guess no megastar. I mean, Octavia Spencer's a big name.
Well, I'm sure everyone went at a reduced rate. They had to have to make the budget.
Yeah. And especially if it's like you want to do Guillermo del Toro. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Cut it. Yeah. Cut the money. I'll do it.
I mean, most of the budget's on the water bill, you know? Like,
yeah. Just a tank of water, yeah. I mean, just, you know, creating and designing the creature, I'm sure, ate up some budget. But then it's a period piece. You have a lot of money into, you know, the period clothes and sets and all those things.
Yeah, and
cars.
The cars.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I love the old movie theater, and I love how her apartment's above it, and then when the scene where she fills up her bathroom full of water, or the monster does or whatever... so that they can make love underwater, And then it leaks down into the theater. And then the theater owner comes up, like, I got four paying customers down there. I got to give refunds.
Yeah.
But like scenes like that were so, it the way that was done, it's funny, it's heartfelt. And, you know, like, this is a woman having sex with a fish guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Floating in her bathroom. Like, none of this could happen. But
On paper, it sounds ridiculous.
It sounds insane.
Yeah.
It sounds insane, but it's like, oh, it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And her acting is amazing because she can't speak.
Exactly. So she has to rely on expressions and just body language to get her emotions and point and dialogue, essentially dialogue across. I mean, her inner dialogue is essentially her movements in sign language and, you know, her facial expressions. So it wasn't an easy role.
No. And then how they did the creature. I mean, some of the eyes and expressions of the creature were like, that was amazing acting.
Right.
You know, and how that was pulled off.
Well, you have a lot of times what happens is with the practical effects, you have, you know, Doug Jones is in the suit for the creature. And then they layer over the computer generated effects on top of that. Like, you know, everything from an eye blink to things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of practical and visual effects, but it's done so seamlessly that, you know, you don't go, oh, that's a practical effect. That's a visual effect. It's combined
and
great.
For $20 million, they made you not see any of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like the scene where, you know, it's the morning after Richard Jenkins is having breakfast and the creature hurt his arm.
Right.
And Sally Hawkins is like patching up his arm, and then she goes into the other room, and he's afraid to be in the room with the, and then the creature comes up and puts his hand, and it's funny because it's cute because Richard Jenkins is like, I don't know if this is sanitary, you know, which I would feel too, like, I don't know what.
Yeah, there's what kind of bacteria does a fish monster have?
Does a fish monster have from the Amazon in my open wound?
Right.
And then he touches the thing and then touches Richard Jenkins' bald head. And Richard Jenkins is like, okay, I get it. Like, he's like, yeah. He's scared, but he's like, okay. And puts his hand, you know. And it was like, that was such a warm, touching moment. And then the next day, his hair starts growing.
Right.
He sees hair in the mirror and he's like, huh? And then he looks and sees his hairpiece because he's got this really flagrant hairpiece, which is funny. And he's like,
yeah, he like heals him.
Right. Mm-hmm. And too, like Richard Jenkins, he's a broken guy. He's trying to get his ad job back, and he's got a drinking problem.
Right, and he's a gay man in the, I think it's 50s, right?
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s.
Late 50s, early 60s is where we're kind of set.
I thought I heard Kennedy in the background on one of the TVs. That's why I thought it was at least 60, 61.
So it's, that makes sense.
But yeah, so everybody is like not allowed to be who they are.
Right.
You know?
And even that scene in at the pie shop where just even stuff that seems random, like the fact that the pie shop owner is putting on an act, like saying like, you know, like y'all come back now, you know, that and like the down home old, you know, old 50s style diner is like, nah, we get the pies delivered. We don't make them here. And, you know, I don't. You know, it's not my real accent. And so everything is like, it's a facade. And then when he comes in and he, Richard Jenkins comes in.
Hairpiece.
Yes.
The facade, you know, her facade of putting on this homely little mute, you know, cleaning lady.
Like nobody is allowed to be who they really are. And then even then when he hits on the pie store owner, then we get into the racism of like, well, you shouldn't come back. This is a family shop.
Right.
So,
well,
before that, he kicks out two black people. These are all reserved. And like, but there's nobody here. It's like, no, they're reserved. So he kicks out the two black people, and then Richard Jenkins hits on him and is like, well, you better leave too. Whoa. This is so you have, you know, all these also episodes of intolerance that also is reflected by, you know, the creature and Sally Hawkins of, you know, the real world versions of those. So everything is in the movie showing you what was going on, where, you know, the creature and Sally Hawkins are allegories of this time and place in history. So it was really an interesting reflection of everything that was going on at the time. And also, obviously, there's real-world reflections to be had as well. But I really just felt like every single scene and every single moment was calculated and deliberate to make you feel those emotions of everything from the injustice to the intolerance to rising above it and seeing, you know, that love and that compassion that, you know, you can have all those things. If we can get past these petty emotions, we can get to the good ones, regardless of how broken or how, how broken inside that you are.
And it's fitting, too. This was not a mistake, obviously. Nothing that he does is that the doctor character, we find out, is a Russian spy.
Yes.
And because it's the Cold War. And in this, we are in another ridiculous McCarthy era in America right now, that then that guy has a heart.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to see the creature killed.
He's just like, he's a man of science and he has a heart, and even though he's working for the Kremlin, he's like, I gotta help save this creature. And
because it shows, it's like, it's not just, you know, the American government, it's, you know, the Russian government,
Everyone's evil. Yeah, big governments are evil.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they're like, either steal the asset or kill it. You know, it's like,
both evil governments were like, get something from it or kill it.
Right, exactly. Weaponize it or make sure someone else can't weaponize it. Mm-hmm. What I loved is that, you know, each government was just cavalier about it. Like, no, this is like a living being. It might be the only one in the world. And like, yeah, it doesn't matter. We don't care.
Yeah.
If we can't make it a weapon, you need to kill it.
Yeah.
And you got to make sure the other guy can't make it into a weapon.
Right. Yeah. And I loved the, you know, everyone is wearing a mask. I mean, even Octavia Spencer, she's the most like upfront, this is who I am character.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But then she still has to acquiesce at times because, you know, when Michael Shannon moves his dominance over everyone in the movie. That's
right.
What he's trying to assert, his dominance over everybody. And she has to kind of like, uh-oh, I can't talk back. I don't want to lose this job.
Right.
You know, even her, who she's being exactly who she is, all of her dialogue is not just, it's not like Guillermo del Toro, like, oh, we'll just give her small talk.
Right.
She's talking about her husband, and he used to, like, there's no more romance. He was a real playboy or whatever she says. He was a real charmer or something like that. And now I haven't had that in a while. And it's like, so there's all this talk of, you know, I fell for this guy because he was a real charmer. Now he's not doing anything. And I want real love too.
Right.
You know, I want respect too. But I'm afraid to lose this job. You know, she sticks up for Sally and sticks up for herself, but still is like, I can only stick up for this, myself and her, in this small, confined.
Right.
You know, the other.
There was definitely some similarities to Hidden Figures, her characters, for sure.
Yeah, and I really, you know, and when she's just like, all right, what are you doing? She's trying to stop her when she's got the creature in the laundry.
Right, the laundry basket.
The basket. She's wheeling him out to the loading dock, and Octavia Spencer knows what's going on and comes down there and goes, what are you doing? And there's this tug of war, this push and pull with the basket. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, fine.
Yeah. You know,
like,
I'll help you smuggle out the fish monster.
I'll help you smuggle him out because, you know, and you see her defend Sally Hawkins' character in the very beginning. Sally Hawkins is late and she's like, you can't be late anymore. And she lets her punch in and someone behind her is like, you can't let her cut in line. I was holding her place.
Yeah.
You know,
just
like, she's always speaking up for her.
Mm-hmm.
That was Sally Hawkins' voice.
Right.
Was Octavia Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
Until she got her own voice.
Right. The other thing I liked too is, you know, you have all those little character moments. Like every character in the movie gets those moments, which is great. Everything from the creature, you know, just the creature, like, you know, slowly liking eggs or healing Richard Jenkins. But even Michael Shannon, when he loses his fingers and they try to sew them back on, but it doesn't take. So you slowly see his fingers start to rot, which is it's symbolic of the rot inside him, where he's not whole. And I just love the idea of that every scene. I'm thinking, God, the continuity people. Like, you have to, all right, there has to be the right amount of rot on the fingers because we're going from scene to scene, and it has to be a progression of where they get worse and worse. Because you saw them blacken as the movie progressed.
Yeah. And it was really, you know, his... I'm glad, too, when they did the escape, when they first got the creature out.
Right.
And they didn't... Because I was watching it, and I was like, there's no way this Michael Shannon character isn't going to catch wise to this somewhere along the way.
Right, right. He's not an idiot.
He's not an idiot. He's really savvy. That's what makes him so terrifying. Mm-hmm. He's super smart and evil.
Because he found the Russian spy at the end. Yeah. And he's like, you know, he followed him.
Mm-hmm. So... And he's just suspicious of everybody.
Right.
And he's always,
it's his job.
He's always taking those...
weird candies.
Those weird green candies in that weird green box that just makes him more creepy.
Right.
But that scene where he starts to see what's going on and he calls down to the guard tower. And I was like, oh, good. So he does get in the way. And then he just unloads his gun into the van as it drives away.
Right.
Just... fingers cut off. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, like that was so, I was like, wow, he's, you know, he's the one person that didn't really have a character arc.
He was a great villain.
Cause he was just pure evil.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing with pure evil.
Mm-hmm. And, but you know, Guillermo del Toro took the time of giving you a little bit of empathy for him.
Just
so he wasn't a cartoon.
Right.
So it just, and it fit, it matched. I'm like, of course there would be a government guy there sent in to look over the asset and make a decision on whether to kill it or not.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what the scene he shows up in, you know, they're like, because you just see them, you see...
He's in the bathroom where he doesn't wash his hands. I mean, what a creepy
scene. What a creep.
Scene.
And the way he does it, you either wash your hands before
yeah.
or after. Never twice. Says a man's weak. You're just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah. Like he's dropping all this, you know, sage knowledge on you. Let me tell you about washing your hands.
Like, and what a creep. And he does it the thing like a lot of arrogant assholes. He says it as though he just assumes his audience is like, oh, thank you. This is great.
Yeah.
Everyone's like... you're a weirdo. There's two women in the bathroom. Doesn't care.
Nope.
You know, isn't like bashful or, hey, ladies, I need some privacy or whatever. He's just like, nope.
I'm gonna drain it.
Whip it out here and wash my hands before.
Yeah.
Not after. Like, you're a weirdo. It's just like.
And explain why.
Explain why. In the weirdest, most, like.
Creepiest
scary,
way.
Creep, like, as he's explaining it to them in the bathroom, you're like, I felt, and it was, Garrett did a great job, I'm like, oh, he could kill them right now. Like,
right,
he's thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he would get away with it.
And he would get away with it. He's thinking, like, can I just kill them, or is it too much trouble?
Yeah.
You know? But, like, the scene when he's first introduced, he walks in, and the cape, and the, not a cape, but like a hat, and a black cane, and he's... Mm-hmm. And there's a little subtle thing. They didn't put a lot of attention on it. It was in the back of the frame. Mm-hmm. So he walks in, and in the foreground of the frame is the big case that they transported the creature from, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then he walks up to that skittery, the like manager of the facility.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's and Michael Shannon's like, who's in charge of security here? And the guy's like, I am. And he holds out his hand to shake it, and it's Michael Shannon... never shakes his hand.
No. Uh-uh.
And it's not, they don't cut to a close-up of him not shaking the hand. It's just sort of like the way it was done is in just such a subtle way of
so you know I'm in charge.
I don't need to shake your hand.
Right.
Get that filthy thing that you don't wash before, after, or whatever. I don't want that to get in the way of my weird green mints. So yeah, it was really, it's an amazing film and it's deserving.
It deserves to be in Best Picture.
Yeah, it does, for sure. Mm-hmm. Because there's no, I didn't find any flaws. I wasn't like, this scene didn't work, or it's a little long, or, you know, that one scene was a little flat, or this one actor, okay, or nothing.
Right.
It was it was a really good film.
It was a really cool, realized vision of a filmmaker.
Yes.
It was like, this, you could tell, you know, you could tell that was a movie that didn't get noted. It was like, no, that's the movie he wanted to make, and that's how he wanted to make it. He got the budget from the studio, and they let him make his movie. And that's why it just felt so organic.
I would love to just know, just get the notes or the memos or the emails or be in audio of any of the meetings. They're like, there's a dance. No, I don't know. Like they floating yeah. a sex scene.
When they were
I
looking mean, at the dailies. We, yeah. I'm like, oh, what did we give $19 million for?
The guy with the toupee. None of this yeah. makes any
They're
sense.
They're already putting it in the write down column.
Yeah, like, we'll release it in February yeah. 10th. No one will care.
Like, all right, tax write off.
Yeah. That was only, you know, someone's like, well, we only spent 20 on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah. It's not bad. It's not, but not a huge loss.
You know, so, maybe it'll make its money back yeah. at BOD or something yeah, like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, some of the weirdos will buy it. That's about it.
Some of the weird fish lovers out there.
Yeah.
But no, it's a really solid film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was, I compare it to like an Amelie. Mm. Or like a City of Lost Children, like a Jean-Pierre Jeunet movie. Like, there's that lead character who's kind of flighty but delightful. You mm-hmm. know, that same sort of thing. Like, I mean, you could almost see this as like a grown-up version of Amelie, to that degree.
Yeah, that's a great
and that amazing production design.
Yeah,
know, yeah, yeah, for similar. Sure.
Yeah, it did. That's a great comparison. Amelie is a really, if you add. Russians, pure evil, and a fish guy.
And masturbation.
And bathtubation. Then you get... No, but that was the thing. That was the beauty of what he did, of Guillermo del Toro, of taking the qualities of a movie like Amelie and putting it into this...
Into a Creature from the Black Lagoon movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so... It was so amazing how he wove these together. Like, that's not easy.
No, no.
Different eras, different genres of movies.
Mixed them all together into a pot.
And it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the reason. It was his vision.
Right, exactly.
It would be different if someone was like, get me a creature movie.
Right.
You know, like whatever studio is right now trying to react to The Shape of Water is going to be like, give us a
a love story creature movie.
Yeah, she falls in love with a bug.
Yeah. Yeah, and get,
Universal.
And get me Tom Cruise.
Yeah, Universal, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I really liked it, and I'm glad it's getting the traction. I'm glad it's getting the nomination. So
yeah, I'm sure Universal's like, we own Creature from the Black Lagoon, and we could make a movie
How
like this.
How the hell did this get
yes.
past us?
that's
it.
I think we covered it.
I think we covered it. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, wait a minute. Before we go.
Wait, we got an ad.
We got some Patreon sponsors.
Oh, yeah.
So is this February dropping?
Yeah.
Yeah, this will be February. Yeah, yeah. So we're losing Frightfully Uninformed.
Thank you so much.
But thank you. We want to thank you for
several months of doing it.
Yes, we appreciate it. We'll see you back.
Many months.
We do have Johnny Rulon. This is The Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic, and it is available on Amazon in both digital and hard copy, an experimental stream of consciousness novel that follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her immortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden place of a supernatural America. Facebook.com/Happy Horror Show Productions. And also the Audacity Performing Arts Project, a nonprofit working to bring after-school performing arts programs to public schools. Audacity's primary goal is to serve those schools who cannot afford those services, and they rely on community donations to keep the programs live. Now, CFN fans, that's you guys, can support Audacity with a $25, normally $30. You know what? This is, I'm going to have him rewrite this copy. I think we're missing a few words.
Right.
Here. CFN fans, you can support Audacity with a $25, normally $30 donation. You can receive an amazing Audacity t-shirt. Visit CFNAudacityPerformingArts.org to learn more.
Ooh, unique URL, guys.
Yes, check it out. So that is our spoiler up.
That's our spoiler up, guys. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I will be performing, headlining at O'Toole's in Honolulu, Hawaii with comedian James Monet, who has been on the show.
That's not the primary goal. Performing or surfing is the primary goal.
It's a surf trip with a comedy show.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what it is. I have the week off from shooting FNX. So James Monet is going to be on the show. So if you're on the island of Oahu, February 2nd, please come out. Tickets are available at grahamelwood.com. And also if you're in Southern California, from February 11th through April 21st, we're shooting 9 more episodes of the FNX comedy experience, the Native American and World Indigenous people.
Did you change the title? Wasn't it Custer's Last Stand-Up?
Yeah, we changed the title. Yeah, we got a little pushback on that title.
You
so
did?
We had to change that title. So the title is the FNX comedy experience. So Nikki Glaser's headlining February 11th. We've got Jimmy Dore coming out. And then amazing Native American comics from Canada, from all over the U.S. are coming.
Oh, great.
And also James Monet is going to be on the show in March, and he will be, since he's Samoan, it'll be the first ever Samoan doing stand-up comedy on American TV.
Wow.
So
that's a first.
We're making history. This is there's never been a Native American TV stand-up comedy series, and so it's great. So we're having Native comics and World Indigenous comics and also a handful of some big-name acts to help bring new eyeballs to the channel. So come out and support the show. It's in this beautiful theater, you know. Do it.
Yeah, support come it. Out. It's come really, out. It's a good show. You got, it's worth it for sure. It's worth the drive.
Thank you. And then like the Comedy Film Nerds YouTube page, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, definitely get to there. We're almost there, almost at 1,000. You guys
on.
Can, you can do it. Get us there.
Do it. Do it. Thank you, Aaron Brungard and everyone at the All Things Comedy Bunker.
It is a bunker. It feels like a bunker. Yeah. Like, yeah. I feel like they have an asset in the next room.
They've got an asset. So maybe Aaron's the Russian spy. Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out if we try to break the asset loose. Yes. We'll see where Aaron lands, where he stands on it. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
one shot first.